Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the November 20th Transportation Land Use Committee meeting. With that, I will call the meeting to order. For scheduling purposes, we're actually going to go to item number four first, which is ZOAM 2015-0005, Mixed Use Zoning Ordinance Amendment, PD-MUB Zoning District. If I could have staff come forward, I'd also like representatives from ZOAG if you can come forward. And I'm assuming staff will have an update from the Planning Commission discussions of the other evening for the committee. So if we can start with that, that'd be perfect. Thank you.
Madam Chair, may I just, before they start briefing, just ask, did staff ever send out any of the recommendations from the Planning Commission to us prior to this meeting?
Yes, we received a supplemental item, also with the update for Howardsville.
Okay. Didn't see it in.
Whenever you're ready, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As far as the update from the Planning Commission, at their November 17th work session, the Planning Commission voted to forward ZOAM 2015-0005 to the Board of Supervisors with a recommendation of approval. Regarding the document forwarded to the Planning Commission from the November 12th Board public hearing, there were four items that that document referenced. Item one was size and location, and it referenced a 1,500-foot radius of non-residential uses. This was an item that was discussed by the ZOAG and staff during the review process, and we had determined that allowing non-residential uses to dictate what uses occur on site would not be administrable or trackable or even enforced. So what we worked on was different language that could accomplish the same thing. And some of the revisions included reducing the minimum floor area for employment uses and also allowing zoning ordinance modifications to the minimum use percentages. Staff recommended this to the Planning Commission, and the Planning Commission concurred with staff's recommendation. This language that was presented was also endorsed by ZOAG going to the Planning Commission. Item two was regarding permitted uses, continuing care, adult assisted living facility, and continuing care nursing home uses. They were classified as residential uses, and therefore any floor area for those uses would count against or towards the residential floor area. Because of the proposed ordinance restricts residential floor area to 50% of the total floor area, they viewed that as kind of a hindrance, and that's what we got from that item. So Planning Commission revised the draft language to move those uses to the employment uses classification. But they also took a look at some of the other public, civic, and institutional uses, and they relocated or reclassified some of the uses in that category also in employment uses. Their reasoning behind that was they wanted to strengthen the public and civic uses classification so they got true public and civic uses. Item three of the attachment was, clarification was sought regarding the bus service requirement when the density was exceeding 20 dwelling units an acre. The language read that a bus service would be considered established when a stop was established on the property, whether it's a bus shelter or within an internal lobby or a shelter attached to an external building. However, seeing the recommendation, the Planning Commission revised the draft language to allow proposed bus service to be required to be met if those facilities are within a quarter mile of the PDMEB zoning district. And that adds a little bit more flexibility as far as meeting the bus requirement. And lastly, item four of the board attachment to the PC was unmet housing needs. That was an issue that the Planning Commission had already took notice of, and we were actually meeting on that to address those two concerns. That issue dealt with financing for the Virginia Housing Development Authority low-income housing tax credit program, referred to as VHDA LIHTC, and also the Housing and Urban Development 221D4 Affordable Housing Program. And essentially, the way the language was read, constructed before, was just to tack on to Article 7. Well, what that did is did not allow anyone participating in Article 7 to get the density bonuses for the PDMB zoning district. So we expanded the income range to just to be up to 100% and then called out specific rent ranges that correlate with the VHDA program, as well as Article 7 program the county has, and also ranges for ownership that correlate with the HUD program and Article 7 of the county. Those were the four items, and the other issues that they had prior to that have been resolved. I do have a presentation to address the information requested by the board for the TLUC, if you'd like for me to proceed with that.
Let me ask the committee members, do you all, would you like to see the presentation? Okay, excellent, please.
There was a question about where the plan calls for mixed-use business, and right now the plan calls for mixed-use business in the business areas. This is a map of that. It's the red area shown here. There was also a question about what densities along the transit station. It's allowed to go up to 50 dwelling units an acre with rail. Along the Dulles Greenway corridor, within 1.5 miles of that, it's allowed to go up to 24 dwelling units an acre, as well as the urban center, which is known as Dulles Town Center. It's up to 24, and then all other areas are envisioned to go up to 16 dwelling units an acre. There was a question about the potential areas for the PDMUB zoning district. The way the ordinance language is written is that it has to be served by at least one arterial or a major collector, and it must be served by public central sewer and water. This map shows the arterials and collectors for the county, and the shaded blue area is the Loudoun Water's central system service area. So therefore, in order for it to comply with the ordinance during rezoning, it would have to be located in the blue area near one of these roadways. There was a quest about for election districts. I can look for that if you like after the presentation, just to give you a better idea of where those are. There was a question about how the density bonuses work and how that accumulates. The multifamily attached only scenario, because the density bonuses are accumulative, they would allow them to use Article 7 and this district, but it's based on unit type. So if a proposal that came through was for multifamily attached only, which is your apartments and your condos, the highest density they could get by right with the PDMUB would be 30 if they have bus service available to the district. If they are required to provide ADUs, the ADU increase would be 10%, which would be 3. The PDMUB bonus for multifamily attached is 20%, so that would be 6. So that would be a total density of 39 dwelling units an acre. As they add more unit types, they get additional bonuses for the density. So if you take the same multifamily scenario and you add multifamily stacked, which are your 2/2 type units or your flats, you get an additional 10%, and that brings it up to 42 dwelling units an acre. And the final table to the right is the mixed housing scenario. If they implement single family, which more than likely would be town single family attached, they would get the ADU increase for single family, and then the PDMUB bonus for single family attached, which would bring it up to a total density of 48 dwelling units an acre. The PDMUB zoning district does restrict single-family uses to no more than 10% of the land area and attempt to try to keep it more of an urban, compact, pedestrian-oriented environment. This is the density calculation. I can go through that if you would like, but essentially the important thing is that the result is the higher the density level goes, there's a calculation on both dwelling units an acre and floor area. And the result is that in order for application to meet the maximum dwelling units per acre, the average size of the unit has to decrease. And essentially there's an inverse relationship with the density and the size of the application. There was a request of what would 54 dwelling units an acre look like. This is Discovery Square, which is just east of Route 28. It's in Fairfax. It is near McLaren Road exit. This area here is 6 acres. It's 342 total units, and the density for this this complex here is 57 dwelling units an acre. The FAR is 0.94. But this is also part of a larger CDP with this application outlined in red. So when you take the totality of the concept development plan, which would be what you would see coming through the rezoning process, this site is 66 acres, almost just under 67. There's just under 1,200 units. And the density is at 17 dwelling units an acre, which is just under 0.7 FAR. ZOAG and staff took a tour of the Mosaic District. It's known on the site plan and the CDP as the Merrifield Town Center. Here's some pictures from this tour. Multi-story buildings greet you as you enter into the main parcel. If you look to the picture to the right, this accessway comes between two commercial buildings, the Target multi-story Target, and then a Cineplex to the right. You have some green area. It was in June, so it was very hot, and you see the water feature being utilized. If you turn around and look down the side of the Cineplex, you'll see the multi-story buildings lining the street and a surface parking lot, a temporary surface parking lot to the left. Here's that building closer. And then if you come to the right of that building and look left, that's the picture you see on the right. And then on the periphery, there is some towns. The project size overall was just under 32 acres, 920 units. Its density was at 29 and a third dwelling units an acre, and an FAR of 1.39. The items presented to the board for consideration are the residual items that we have not fully worked out. And some of those are for the board's consideration, such as design. Much of the design requirements that were in the PDMB zoning district have been retained. They've been revised to add some flexibility. Staff really would like to have taken more of a proactive approach to discourage or prohibit some suburban-style development. That way, there would be some clear expectations for all applicants. Right now, it would be incumbent on the applicant to provide the design that would be necessary to provide that. However, there is a regulation in the PDMUB zoning district that requires design guidelines to be provided in the rezoning process for consideration. The density, the plan only contemplates 24 dwelling units an acre along Dulles Greenway Corridor in the urban center. And the transit nodes at 50 dwelling units an acre. Those are the two highest areas. This, with bus service, would be 30 dwelling units an acre and could exceed that with the unmet housing need density bonuses. There is a smaller minimum district size that is allowed from the current PDMUB zoning district. It's allowed to be 5 dwelling units an acre if it's under unified control or has an approved concept development plan. This provides greater opportunities for infill, But it also encourages more of a piecemeal process rather than a comprehensive development approach, which was the origin of the district for the Route 50 corridor. And then lastly, some of the uses, I think it was noted at the board public hearing, may not present the compact pedestrian-oriented atmosphere that is desired. Staff has attempted to address those by working with ZOAG to have additional development regulations, such as certain uses need to be multi-story, at least three stories, and as well as some legislative processes that would place caps on square footage by right, and then they would have to go through a special exception process if they want to exceed that cap. And that's mainly for the design. But overall, the uses shift from the predominantly employment-generating uses of office to just a general mix altogether, which is that's different than the plan policy and the origin of the district. And all of these items are being presented to the board as decision points for your consideration. And this concludes my presentation. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Excellent. Do any of the committee members have questions for staff? Supervisor Clark.
Thank you, Chairman Volpe. Thank you for providing the map on page 58 of the iPad. Would you please bring that up on the screen? The blue shaded. Okay. So what's not in here that was in the prior packet that we had looked at is the map that shows the existing PD MUB areas, which they're very minute. There are very few of them compared to what you see here. So my question is, one, when this gets forwarded to the public hearing, if you could include that existing map along with this map that's being proposed, I think that contrast is important for people to understand. So this blue shaded area covers pretty much every district supervisor's election district except for the Leesburg district. And it also covers areas in the transition zone.
Yes, it does cover areas in the transition zone.
Right. In fact, most of the transition zone. So my question has to do with what the impact of approving something like this could be on the transition zone. And then there's a second question with respect to the comprehensive plan, but if you could answer that one, that would be helpful.
Sure. Before I go into the impacts, I would say that this district is envisioned to take place in the suburban policy area. The ordinance regulation doesn't call that out because, you know, that's plan policy and that we want to keep it as a regulatory language. So it states the arterials and major collectors and the service areas for utilities, the two main components of being in the suburban policy area. With that said, any application that comes through the process to go into the PDMUB zoning district would have to go through a rezoning, and it would come to the board for a decision. But I'm pretty sure that if it's in the transition policy area and even this far west portion of this Loudoun Water service area looks like it's in the rural or close to the rural, it would not be a density of that magnitude would not be supported because the plan policies would not support it that are currently in place. The impacts have not been evaluated as far as what it would be. This is a broad swath of what the location it could go. If the board would like for staff to look at those impacts, we can. However, we viewed our role in this process as this was a ZOAG-initiated amendment. It received a resolution of intent to amend by the board, and we were helping ZOAG get to the place where they wanted to go. And I believe the charge was to increase flexibility in the district and encourage mixed-use development in the county.
Well, thank you for that. I do want to say there's no way I could consider supporting this at this point in time without the analysis being done. My personal opinion as one committee member is that analysis absolutely needs to be provided. I have tremendous concerns with the ability for this type of development to occur in the transition zone. It needs to be in the right places. I do agree with the suburban policy area, but the transition zone is not the suburban policy area. And so, one, I would like to see that analysis. Two, I'd like to see the original PD MUB map aside this for the public hearing. And then I have a question with respect to the comprehensive plan review, because that's going to be embarked on by the next board. So let's say, conceivably, if this were to get moved forward in the next 6 weeks of this term and get approved this term, in the next term, the next board going through the comprehensive plan review, could they conceivably change this?
I think that would depend on the comprehensive plan. Ricky, do you want to touch on the comprehensive plan as far as it's coming forward?
Yeah.
I understand. I'm trying to make a point.
Yeah, most definitely. Whatever results come out of the comprehensive plan, it would be up to the board to move forward with implementing that through changes to the ordinances. So if we get direction to do that, yep, it could change.
And it would certainly be one of the components. It would be one part of the entire comprehensive plan review. I really feel this is cart before the horse. Personally, I don't think we should be doing anything more on this other than the additional analysis to be brought forward and then to have it tabled until they have the comprehensive plan review, the next board. It's my personal opinion.
Any other items or questions for staff? Chairman York?
If I may, to follow up on Ms. Clark's questions, given where we are with the current comprehensive plan, why in the world, I still don't understand, why in the world staff would bring forward a map showing something that isn't? I mean, if you're showing this to be in the transition zone, but the transition zone by comp plan doesn't support this. And it makes no sense that this is being brought forward with a map that shows it in a transition zone. And I can tell you right now, I'm not voting for this unless this map changes to only in a suburban policy area. And I don't recall, maybe the board did, and I missed it, maybe the Planning Commission's recommending it. Was there any indication by this body or the Planning Commission that we should do this in the transition zone?
We didn't get that direction, but one of the things that, like Joseph said, working on the flexibility of this district, but we, if the board's desire is to limit it to the suburban area, that's something we can look at putting in the ordinance to kind of limit where it can applications can be reviewed. We'll look into that and see if we can just maybe narrow that focus.
With all due respect, Mr. Bargert, the comprehensive plan is a comprehensive plan until it's changed. And to come in here with a map that shows this going into the transition zone is almost, I won't say the word, but it's just the wrong procedure. And if staff felt that we should have a map of it going into the transition zone, somebody should have asked a question before the map was put out public. And I think totally the procedure is that irrespective of the MUB coming forward today and the board, if they choose to go forward with a comprehensive plan look-see, if you will, and review it, that's a discussion for them entirely to do what, they make a recommendation for debate in the community is what to do throughout countywide. So, one, if this is the go-forward public hearing, Madam Chair, I will not support this unless this map is changed to take it out of the transition zone. That's somebody else's discussion. The other thing that I am concerned about, even with the whole suburban policy area now being shaded in blue, and something that I would have continued to harp on with respect to the current process of discussion around the Silver Line CPAM is, has anybody done a transportation analysis of the impact of this on our roadways? How much of this do we actually expect to now develop in the county in a suburban policy area now that it's being proposed that the entire suburban policy area can handle should this be allowed, this product should be allowed throughout the whole suburban area? I have a concern that our eyes grow wide about how much development we want or don't want in Loudoun County, but we never ask the key essential question is, can our infrastructure even handle it? We are in a nightmare scenario. The next board with the schools now requesting five schools moving up into the first year of the new CIP. We are way behind on our roads, and even if we get through being able to develop what is in the CTP, we better doggone make sure that we're either planning whether or not the current CTP can handle the extra density from residential and commercial as well. And is that analysis been done with this product?
No, has not been done. It's relying on each case being evaluated on a case-by-case basis to determine whether or not the transportation and other aspects can be evaluated at that time and let the board decide that. So it's up to, if that's the direction you want to head, then we would need to spend more time determining that before we move forward.
Okay, let me just ask this one. Another question with respect to the transportation side. If the board chooses to go forward with the comp plan, is it going to be the recommendation of the staff? Ultimately, it's a decision of the board. Will the staff recommend doing a countywide transportation look-see of the transportation plan as it is being possibly impacted by whatever changes are being looked at in terms of land use within the comp plan?
Mr. Chairman, it would be staff's recommendation to support a land use plan update as well as the transportation update, because that's really important to have those both looked at the same time.
And I hope that's being done with the Silver Line CPAM as that process goes forward. Help me understand where in a county right now possibly we would see this product at 5 acres?
The opportunity for doing a 5-acre one was to look at an existing plan development or a planned commercial area to interject and have it fit in with that. That was one of the, like, for example, we've got a potential application at Goose Creek where they want to interject some, change it to add some residential there. And in context of looking at surrounding area with the existing non-residential area, that would be something the board would have to decide whether or not that proposal kind of fits in with the overall picture of a mixed-use product.
Okay.
And so that would be, it was designed to kind of accommodate those infill type things. Since
and so the 5 acres could be potentially all residential?
That would be something that the applicant would have to address in the sense of their application to go for a modification to potentially be all residential, but that would be a board decision whether or not they would.
Okay, help me. Okay, I understand that. Help me under what is being proposed here. And I apologize, I did not see this in the iPad, and when I went back to the public hearing document, it did not contain any of the attachments to it. And so under this, if there were 5 acres, what would they have to propose if they weren't proposing any amendments to the zoning district? What would that 5 acres look like?
The minimum use percentages in this draft ordinance is 15% of the floor area has to be employment uses, 10% commercial.
Okay.
5% commercial, 10% residential, and at least 2% public and civic. And 10% of the 15% of the land area has to be open space.
Okay, I got 5 acres, and you just gave me about 30% of 100%. So
yes, that's correct. Yep.
Okay, I'm lost.
They're minimums. They're not
okay,
the
they're
caps.
Minimums. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you,
Madam Chair. If I could just clarify on the map, I understood the request to be as far as what the zoning district would allow. And I took that request literally, that the zoning district states central water and sewer utilities and then major collectors and arterials, and that's what this map is depicting. So in essence, it could be located in these areas and comply with the zoning district, and it would be through the legislative process in which we'd use the plan as a guide to state whether or not they meet the intent.
But, Madam Chair, could we not in this ordinance restrict it to the suburban policy?
Yes. And I can work with county attorney's office to figure out how we can work that to where it gets restricted to suburban policy area.
And I'm sorry, Madam Chair, one more. You had mentioned this after the Planning Commission dealt with it, that it needed to go to public hearing again. Am I correct on that? Did I read that email?
I believe we have an update on that.
I was going to ask for the county attorney's office to come forward.
I believe it.
Because there was a little confusion about it.
Well, I was going to ask, if it is, can you tell us why?
Is this on?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't see any lights. Okay.
Well,
Wednesday, I got... In the midst of working on three things, I got a question in a vacuum, which said, if the Planning Commission makes a change to the advertised amendment to the zoning ordinance, can it then go forward to the board? And my answer is, yes, the statute contemplates they'll make changes, and then their changes will be advertised in the board public hearing. And then I went on about my work. Staff took that and put into their staff report, this is going to have to go back to another public hearing. Well, I learned about this yesterday. Well, wait a minute. Oh, they already had a public hearing. It's too late for that process. So I went last night and this morning to look at the ad for the November 12th Board of Supervisors public hearing. And I consulted with Jason Hobby in my office and with Joseph to find out exactly what changes were made by the Planning Commission. And I looked at the ad for November 12th. I am satisfied that the ad for November 12th covered all of the things that the changes that the Planning Commission made, and that in fact we did advertise to the public all the things that were previously in the ordinance and the changes that the Planning Commission has added, so that we're covered in my opinion this morning is that we do not need to have another public hearing on this.
Good, because we have too many items on that public hearing already. Yes, it is.
Well, and I'm going to ask my further question then. If, for example, we ask to have it showing a map that it's only the suburban policy area, do we have to have another public hearing?
You're reducing it.
I didn't see anything in the ad that said what policy areas we were going to do this for anyway. We're talking about amending the zoning ordinance. So the ad, the map is simply to show you illustratively where the arterials and public central water is that could apply. But it's not part of what was being amended.
Okay, perfect. So if we accept the changes that the Planning Commission recommended, which Joseph has explained to us, and just say it's the suburban policy area, we could take action on this item at our December 2nd board meeting. Is that correct?
That's my opinion.
Okay.
Okay.
That's good. Supervisor Clark?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So of course, we know based on this map that's presented, and I want to thank you for providing it because this is important discussion to have, because now everyone understands that the way this item is to date is that if this was moved forward and approved as is, that it is possible for applications to come into the transition policy area for this type of development, and it would be dealt with for consideration, which I do think is absolutely inappropriate. So it's not so much just changing the map, but the language that provides the ability to do that. So my question is staff able to change language to protect the transition zone and area so that it's only the language only allows for suburban policy area development for the PD MUB?
I will have to consult with the county attorney and the zoning administrator on the exact language, but I believe there is a way to craft it to where it will be within the suburban policy area. It might not state specifically suburban policy area, but it may use geographic locations or certain roadways or density levels of some sort to make that a regulation.
Okay, well, that's, I think that absolutely has to be done. If this committee is on the same page with respect to the intent that we discussed before about this only being in the suburban policy area, we need to ensure that that's going to occur. And if the language and everything can't be changed in time, I don't think we should rush this. This could certainly go to the next board because, once again, they're going to be dealing with the comprehensive plan, going to be looking at this again, but it needs to be right. I mean, we can't take the chance of the language not being correct.
Thank you. Supervisor Higgins.
A question to this issue. You all have another map or had another map in this presentation, I believe, if I can get you to back up to it. Yeah. Can you explain again exactly what this map is showing us as opposed to, I mean, I understand the other one, that's the Loudoun Water service area, which you'd have to have in order to do this, but tell us a little more about this, because in my head, when I was thinking about this thing, I thought we were looking at specific areas that this would be applicable for and appropriate for based on Metro or whatever else is going on, not a third of the county.
Sure, I can address that. The red areas are the business areas according to the plan land use in the comprehensive plan. And within that language, the plan land use allows, I think, 25% of the acreage to be high-density residential. So mixed-use business would be supported in the areas planned for the red. With that being said, when we looked at what is available out there, most of this red has entitlements already for development. There's only a few portions maybe near the Goose Creek Village, which is, if you look at this 24, this intersection that's around here, this area is like the northern portion of Broadlands. So you have the county admin, county schools admin building there, Clyde's, and I think the shopping center. There is some land available for development, but there's already entitlements on it as far as what it will be. These are the maximum densities they're planning for in the plan. And I would like to point out that the language that is in the current draft regarding utilities is more restrictive than what's in the current PDMUB because we've added the word central. The only change with the arterial and major collector roadways is that we changed the wording from along to be served by, because by the term along, it would have to front on those roadways. Did I answer all your questions?
I think so, but it would seem to me that, and I don't know exactly how to write it, but if we're going to go this way, we should focus on these areas and try to, in areas that maybe are going to be similar to that in the future, but to focus on these areas rather than a third of the whole area east of Route 15.
Mr. Chairman.
If I may ask staff, under 4-1352, it says the district shall be located in areas served by the public. You added central water and sewer systems. Can that sentence be changed to the PD MUB shall be allowed in the suburban policy area?
As Joseph said, we will do work with the county attorney's office to make sure legally that's something we could do. But if not, we'll figure out a way to try to limit it and to meet your expectations. And okay. So we will be charged with that between now and the time it goes to board.
Okay. And Madam Chair, I want to put a motion on just for one item in this district, because there is a use that I think is allowed by special exception that I don't think should be considered at all, and that's data centers. The purpose of this is to kind of create, I would say, as a mixed-use environment, and I think the data centers create or something that I fully support, but not in the middle of a mixed-use type of community. So I would move that we amend this by removing altogether data center as a use.
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and properly seconded to remove data center as a use in a PD MUB.
Yes.
Any discussion on the motion? Okay. May I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am.
Because my concern is if how would this work for staff? And, of course, ZOAG, you all can jump in, too. You know, we're looking at infills or, you know, if there's a data center someplace and somebody's bought 300 acres around it, would it preclude them from doing something? I don't want to, you know, because we do have data centers in some interesting places. You know, I can think about the one that's behind Alban Tractor. How would that affect, you know, because you, I guess, would have to segment that somehow out?
I would like to defer to ZOAG to give some feedback on that, because that was one of the things that they were trying to propose.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. That was not the question, is whether or not we want it or not. The question was, would it, if there is a data center close by, would that preclude?
Okay.
And so that's your question, not ZOAG's.
Okay.
Yeah, I can. I think if the question is if there's a data center, and the first option I would say is that that data center should not be included in a new PD MUB zoning district. If it was, I think that use potentially could be incorporated, but it would be then considered a non-conforming use and would be limited in terms of expansion. So I think any proposal for a new PD MUB should probably not include, should carve out that data center to prevent limitations on its expansion in the future if data center was taken out of the MUB as a use.
Okay, because I'm just trying to make sure. I wish I had I'm a visual person. Like if there's already a data center there, and say it's even on its own parcel, would it make it more difficult for the next door neighbor who owns a parcel of land to try and do a mixed use business project next door? Does that help?
I think the applicant would gerrymander the district to exclude the data center use from the district, so it would remain in compliance. As far as marketability, I couldn't answer that question. Would like to add something, mm-hmm. if I could. Staff did consider that and had the same opinion. So we did work with ZOAG to put additional development standards. And one of those is that the use shall be a minimum of 3 stories in height and contained within a multi-story building, and or contained within a multi-story building, and that the building footprint shall not exceed 400 feet in length or width. unless the site and building sign for the use accommodates pedestrian circulation in a manner that does not adversely affect the ability of pedestrians in the district to access adjacent land uses. So that was a consideration that we had.
Say that last part about the adjacent uses. Say that again.
If the use accommodates pedestrian circulation in a manner that does not adversely affect the ability of pedestrians in the district to access adjacent land uses. So essentially, you don't want a super block of a data center. It would have to be no more than 400 feet in length or width. It could contain a block, but not many blocks.
Madam?
Mr. Chairman?
If there is a development that has a five-acre plot, and they want to come in and they want to zone that 5 acres to PDMUB, and across the street they have a data center, it would not preclude them from rezoning the 5 acres to PDMUB. What my proposal does is simply that in the PDMUB zoning, it would not allow data center use, period.
Also, if I could just make another kind of quick clarification, when we're talking about data centers here as a use, we're talking about as a principal use, a standalone use. There may be some uses where a business would have a data center component just to serve their use, which could be accessory, and so we're not talking about that. We're talking about the principal use of a data center, just to clarify that.
Okay. Mr. Hassinger, you all have been...
The concept all along has been to be as flexible as possible within the MUB in terms of uses. And so trying to predict the future, we don't see the sprawling suburban data centers of today as the use that would be located in this kind of a district. However, as Mark said, within the component of an office building, say, there may in fact be, and we struggled with this in other definitions, light manufacturing. So that if you had rapid prototyping, if you had the car facility that's going in National Harbor today, that in today's ordinance, that wouldn't be allowed. And so if you had a multi-story urban-style data center as part of a mixed office building, that's a use that we felt strongly should, in fact, be allowed. But again, the impression is not to try to do, you know, one-story sprawling data centers. It wouldn't meet the criteria of the intent of the ordinance. It wouldn't meet some of the minimum height requirements on the minimum side. But to have as much flexibility as possible in those non-residential zones for uses that either exist today, and the urban data center does, or even on the light manufacturing side, if you will, by definitions of how the ordinance reads today, to have that flexibility, to have those uses in these kinds of environments.
Madam Chair.
Supervisor Clark.
Thank you. The data center discussion should not be based only on the aesthetics, only on the building structure, because there are infrastructure impacts. So the language that was mentioned having to do with pedestrians, that's not the issue. So the question is, based on a data center size that staff has come up with for the language in here, how much megawattage could be produced or would be required for a data center of that size? And would that megawattage require a substation? Would it require, because that would absolutely, or could, I won't say would, could absolutely negatively impact the intent of the PDMUB for the mixed use, for which, so it's not, you can restrict the size, height, scale of the building, but if it's requiring so much support that, you know, the support that's going in around it is going to change the environment, landscape, aesthetics, I mean, you're really kicking yourself. So that's something I know, staff, that we don't have, because we've been having these data center discussions continuously. So I would suggest getting information on what the maximum megawattage could be in a building of that size. I know the Dominion Power's data center folks have that information, Novec as well, and finding out if at the maximum it would require a substation if only, let's say, for example, 230 kV lines are in existence in the area? I mean, there's just it's a much bigger issue than, you know, all due respect, I think ZOAG and everyone is discussing here. So I wholeheartedly support the motion that the chairman put on the table. The second item, staff, you mentioned the central utilities. As long as that language is left in this item and that the PD MUB is somewhat based on that in terms of ability to apply, I mean, the transition zone does have central utilities, central water. So that's still going to be a problem.
Mr. Higgins.
If I could comment on the motion raised by Chairman York, I think I understand both sides of this. I understand the concern about the huge data centers that are out there and the electricity that's required and the infrastructure that comes all along with that. But I also, I think, understand where ZOAG is coming from, because much to my surprise, when I got into working with Loudoun Mutual in Waterford, Loudoun Mutual Insurance Company, that is a data center in Waterford. It's in a historic village. Now, I don't know anything about the requirements of it, but it's the oldest business in Loudoun County, and nobody knew it was there. And it's their data center that they use to collect all their information for the insurance company in Waterford, and much also to the chagrin of some of the residents that have been trying to get broadband. They also have Fios that goes in there from Verizon that nobody can get a hold of. But that's another issue. Anyway, so I don't know if there's any middle ground to be struck on this, but I do know that you can have smaller, much smaller data centers that would be appropriate or might be appropriate in something like this if there was a way to write that in, either by restricting the power usage so that the infrastructure isn't necessary or something. And so maybe we could explore that. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
No. And I appreciate the discussion we've been having and, of course, understand folks' concerns. And I would like us to find a middle ground, because I would not want a business who, say, is in an office building not to be able to have the infrastructure that it needs internal for, you know, its operations. Does staff have any idea of how we could do that so that we're not looking at, say, for example, one of, for lack of a better term, one of these nice big kind of data center parks that we have? And we love you, data centers, in case anybody's wondering. You know, but that it would be, like you said, the thing where it's in the building and it's part of it and it helps the folks that are in that building.
We would need more time to figure out if we can make that work and present it back to the board if that's the board's desire.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
I want to check down the line. Is it the desire, or are we looking at just saying no data centers? Because I don't want them to go and try and write language if nobody wants it.
First of all, what Mr. Higgins described to me is not being restricted by what I'm doing. The data center that he has mentioned is the supporting use of the insurance company that is in Waterford. If we are now claiming that as a data center, then that's an illegal use in Waterford. It is a supporting use to the businesses that is there. Businesses may have small data centers to support their business. The data center, maybe it's a matter of changing the language, and I'd have to go back in definition. The data center for which I am speaking and proposing that we remove is those businesses that are purely data centers for the prospect of allowing other businesses to store their data in that center. And the data centers that we know of today, yes, would not be appropriate for this. So if staff wants to try to figure out some language that may satisfy me, I am fine with that. it'll be interesting to see.
Or could we do something even simpler than that? Would you be willing to revise your motion to say something along the lines of no standalone data centers, but just data center uses supportive of the business or ancillary or what do you call it, accessory?
Accessory. I think to do that, I mean, I think that's already allowed in the ordinance as accessory. So I think if you're trying to get do away with the standalone, then Chairman York's recommendation would be the way to go to remove it.
I agree. So, Madam Chair, if I may, and I'm very familiar with the environment of data centers that are all in cities everywhere, Washington, New York. In the early 80s, I sold co-location data centers, so because I worked for a public data networking company for 15 years. And so I understand that, but we live in a different era now, and everything is much more powerful, and the power draw is really what is the big issue here, is the rub. Mm-hmm. So I agree with Chairman York's motion still, but just as a matter of the data center topic overall, staff needs to get a better understanding of the power draw for these different sizes of data center uses, whether it be in an office environment, whether it be standalone, and there is a calculation based on the size of the data center, how much equipment is in there. So I really feel that there needs to be some more research and information gathered, and at some point in time there should probably be something added in that restricts in these different use areas the data center that in terms of the power draw not exceeding a certain amount. So it's a little more complicated. I personally feel like there's so much more that needs to be done on this. I just don't see this happening here within the next month. The traffic analysis has not been done. The analysis with respect to the additional residential compared to the way it's currently zoned has not been done. We're talking about the issues we have right now with having to move up schools and additional schools and so on and so forth. So I don't see how in good conscience when we're considering any type of zoning that would involve some additional residential units compared to what's already zoned for, how we could consider that without knowing what those impacts are. So is staff able to do that type of analysis? And if so, how much time would it take you?
That type of analysis would take us some time. And we wouldn't, if the board wanted to go in that direction, we wouldn't be ready to move it forward, you know, next month.
Well, this is a very impactful thing. I think it's important to be looking at. I am a big supporter of this type of zoning. I've frequented the Mosaic over in Merrifield and so on and so forth, if it's put in the right places. But this is a big change. It needs to be done right. And I think as a county, with the challenges that we have, and what our citizens are already going through with respect to transportation, infrastructure challenges, and everything else, that we need to have that information before we can effectively move forward.
I know. And the motion we have on the table right now is to not allow data centers in a MUB zoning category. The nice thing about it is my aide was doing a little research, and for example, at 1812 Moore Street in Arlington, there is literally the substation is in the building as part of it. It's all enclosed. It's right on the street, and apparently no one even knows it's there. So my concern is by saying no data centers without saying no separate data centers, like standalone data centers, we could be cutting off our nose to spite our face, that there is businesses that could go into that building that would have as part of their use data center, like your example from Waterford.
That was my question.
Yeah, but I want that clearly reiterated, because if you say no data centers in MUB.
Correct. If you would remove the data center from the use list, that would mean a standalone principal data center use serving, you know, broad customers would not be permitted in the district. It would not preclude the smaller data centers serving a particular use. Right, in the same building.
Okay. So, for point of clarification, if this happens, and we approve this motion, if someone comes in, and by the way, I love my aide in the back, Josh, calm down. I know you were at all these meetings. I appreciate it. He's very excited. But you're actually getting people to smile up front who are watching you going, yes, no, yes, no. I don't want us to be in a situation where we then discourage a company wanting to have their business in a mixed-use district because when they read the ordinance, it says, oh, no data centers. And they think, well, I'm just going to walk away then. I can't look at this. So, Mark, I'd like to go back to you because you talked about trying to explain how you have it inside the building and it's part of what's happening inside the building. If we were to say no data centers in a MUB, am I correct in my understanding that it could send that message to companies that have data centers as part of like the infrastructure that they need to operate their business? Would that discourage them from even looking at going into a MUB district?
I'm going to give you the classic answer. It depends. But, again, I think that general statement you're making is what we've been trying to tackle in ZOAG, to try to make things as simple as possible so there aren't mixed messages, so there aren't non-economic development kinds of statements within the ordinance. I'm going to look to my colleagues here more on the due diligence side of, you know, how much of a message does that send by, not having data centers in the by right use list, but in the definitional side of the world, clearly allowing them as a accessory use.
Well, let me say this. Data centers are not proposed as a by right use. They'd be proposed as a special exception use, which would address some of Supervisor Clark's issues in terms of, is it too big? Is it creating a drain on other resources? And so nobody could come forward and do it without getting the approval and a better understanding of the impacts. With regard to what message does it send to the data center industry, I personally would defer to Buddy Reiser on that question and whether or not he sees there being benefit to the diversification of the types of data centers we could see in the county and moving forward. So I could take a swag at it, but it would be Colleen's view of the world, and the reality is you should take somebody's opinion who's much, much smarter.
Supervisor Higgins.
Going back to the issue that I raised, so if a business wants to come into this area with a proprietary data storage use for themselves, not unlike I described, that is permitted, that would be permitted even with the motion the chairman has put forward.
Right. If it was serving just the one use, accessory to that use, it would be allowed. If it's affiliated with the use that's permitted in the district.
Madam Chair.
But who would make that decision?
Well, if it ever came to question of whether it's accessory or not, it would be a zoning administrator determination through the determination process. But if it is clearly serving one use and it's not trying to circumvent the ordinance by trying to get around that and use that, I think that could be determined through a zoning administrator determination, which could be appealed. But if it is serving only one use, it's pretty clear that that's typically an accessory use.
It's typically clear.
Madam Chair, well, that's where Supervisor something Clark. I would just suggest that we look at how we could make it more clear, apparent in the language for any business that would be proposing data center accessory use so that they it's clear that that is permitted, that's allowable. I mean, maybe that's one way to clear it up.
See, we're trying to look into the future. You know, it's going to be to the point where somebody who's even operating a home-based business could have their own version of a little data center, you know, in their home.
Madam Chair, with all due respect, the zoning ordinance allows anybody who has a business who wants to put their own little data center to support to use. There is no issue. The motion I put on the table was simply restricting the use of a standalone data center in the PBMUB. Let's vote up or down on the issue. You're simply just trying to put red herring in where there isn't. Because we don't say the word data center, should this motion go through, does not restrict any business from coming in and putting in their own data center to support their facility. It's been that way. It will continue to be that way unless somebody puts in to the zoning a restriction that does not allow any business to have their own data center. Let's get real here. Let's just simply vote up and down on the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are the other members ready to vote? Seeing no objection, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I will abstain. Supervisor Delgado is absent for the vote. That will pass 3-1-1. With Supervisor Delgado absent, Supervisor Volpe as an abstention. Next item on this list.
Madam Chairman, we do not need to go planning, or excuse me, we do not need to go to the public hearing. So, Madam Chairman, I'm going to recommend or move that the Transportation Land Use Committee recommend to the Board of Supervisors that we approve ZOAM 2015-0005 Mixed Use Zoning Ordinance Amendment PDMUB Zoning District for approval, subject to the amendment that is made today, and that staff revise the map and the language restricting the PBMUB use to the suburban policy area. I think I got it all.
Could you put in the friendly amendment, including what we discussed earlier, that the Planning Commission, the changes they made about, like, the nursing homes?
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair, that is included in this draft here.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. I didn't know if you all had time.
Yeah.
All right. It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Supervisor Clark and Supervisor Higgins.
Yes. So I seconded it for the purposes of discussion. I still have an issue with the fact that we don't have the data. We don't have the analysis. So this thing goes forward, and it comes before the board, and we don't have the analysis on the impact. I am voting against this thing because I feel like it is wholly inappropriate to take action when we don't know what the impacts are going to be on our citizens in the county. And so I do feel that some things need to be changed, and the PDMUB in the suburban policy area making those changes, particularly around the metro stations in certain areas, is appropriate. But we still don't have this thing ready for prime time. That's just my personal opinion.
Supervisor Higgins.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The information that Supervisor Clark is looking for on impacts and whatnot, is that possible to have in time for our meeting?
No. The premise for this amendment would be that each case would be evaluated on a case-by-case basis to evaluate school impacts, evaluate transportation impacts, and so that's what the premise of this proposal is. The extra analysis broadly, yes, that would take significant time to evaluate transportation, schools, and things of that sort. And I'm just not exactly sure how we'd go about doing that, but But did that answer your question?
Well, to Supervisor Clark, I mean, I support this type of zoning, but to Supervisor Clark's concerns, I share some of those. To launch forward with this without a better understanding of how it's going to impact us, particularly in light of the fact that we're going to be looking at a comprehensive plan amendments or a series of rewriting it, how do you propose that we deal with that?
Again, like other cases that the board has considered, like Waterside and things of that sort that weren't consistent with the plan, each of those proposals were evaluated to determine whether or not the board felt comfortable that the schools and transportation and other things were addressed with that case. And that's how it would be proposed with this amendment. To answer your question.
Well, going back to your map with the red areas that originally this type of zoning was designed to go into, that type of an approach restricts it considerably to those areas that already have a business area or business flair. So that would be less impactful, certainly, than the broad brush of the blue area. So, I mean, it gives us some direction, and I would assume that since this is already zoned for similar uses, that, in fact, there is some study, outlook, whatever, of the impact on the infrastructure.
Again, the proposal you have before you right now in the motion is the suburban policy area, and that would be broader than this.
Yeah, Chairman York's motion was to limit it to the suburban policy area.
I understand.
Yeah.
Well, I'll support the motion to go move it forward, and we'll see what happens at the meeting.
Mr. Chairman?
I just a question. I need to rehear you, I think. Did you say that my motion was broader than this?
It's broader than these areas shown on the map.
Because it would be suburban.
Because it would be within limited to the suburban policy area that people could bring cases about.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
But of course, the plan would be. Each case would be evaluated based on the current plan, and we'd have comments whether or not we felt, as a staff, that...
You just showed us a map that had it in the transition zone as a possibility where somebody could rezone to. And quite frankly, somebody could propose to rezone this up in Luckett's. The only thing restricting it is a board that says no and a recommendation by the comp plan that says no, it would not be supported. So help me understand, are you proposing or we're proposing to limit MUB to what is this area on your map?
No, sir. The motion before that you put forth is in suburban policy area.
Yes.
So that would be... something we would work to put in that would limit the cases just to that area. Is that what you're asking?
No, what you said is that is my motion more limited than that map?
No.
No.
Okay,
sir.
So I'm confused.
I'm sorry about the confusion.
I think, I don't know if this will clarify, but the map, the blue area, the map that was put
in. No, this map right in front
of us. This map here is showing the business area. So in essence, this is the area per the plan where the PD MUB would be supported.
Right now.
So then,
and those areas are all in the suburban policy area.
I believe so. Yes.
And except for those along the Leesburg. Those are Leesburg, joint land management area, I believe. So.
And going through this exercise, is it proposed that we allow it in other areas other than the business areas that you show on this map?
The way the zoning ordinance text reads right now, it would open it up broader than the like the blue map. It would allow it based
and
on
I'm
the zoning.
I'm asking, does staff support that?
Staff would prefer, I think, to put language in to limit it to the suburban policy area. Per ZOAG, again, this was trying to get ZOAG's recommendations
okay.
to
you.
Open it up to more locations than what's currently allowed.
Okay. Thank you.
Supervisor Higgins.
But to Chairman York's question, the blue area is one thing. The suburban policy area is something else, and this is a third thing. My understanding, could be wrong, is that if we were to pass this today, under the current zoning, while this area is in the suburban policy area, this is the only areas that it would be applicable to, correct?
No.
Or not correct?
No.
These are the areas. Go ahead, Joe.
Those are the areas.
The areas in red are what is supported by the plan policy.
Right now.
Right now, yes.
But if we pass this item, are we changing the plan policy?
No.
No.
No, so this is the area that these would be restricted to.
No.
Okay. By ordinance.
All right. Thank you. Would you all be so kind to pull up the county map that shows where the suburban policy area is? Right now, today, as we're sitting right here today, it's on the county website. If the public will indulge us for a moment while they locate it. Nice picture, Mr. Barker.
Should be in the map gallery.
Ooh, there you go, office of mapping. Close, but no cigar. That would be lovely. We'll recess for 5 minutes. Good morning. If we could come back to order. I do see, I believe, that we have the appropriate map on the screen now. Thank you. If staff could clearly point out where the suburban policy area is.
The suburban policy area is shaded in pink in this graphic.
Well, we're waiting for, where's Supervisor Higgins? Okay.
Restroom. I think. Well, he could be supporting the rural economy. Okay. So if we were to amend language to say the suburban policy area, having this planning map, which shows exactly where it is, correct?
I've had some time during the break to talk with the county attorney's office, and if you all give us some flexibility to kind of come up with a solution that maybe is more of trying to reach your objective of limiting it to that suburban area. There is some concerns about tying a zoning ordinance to a comprehensive plan designation area, but we may have some other alternatives that accomplishes the same person.
I appreciate that fact, and I heard at one point you all saying something about roads, but as we know around here, roads move.
I think we're going to look at, we might be looking at the district, suburban type districts, and so that might be, if it is a certain suburban type district, that's the only way you can rezone. It has to be within a suburban type district. And so we just need some time to explore with the county attorney's office. So
a suburban type district?
Well, suburban districts. There are certain districts that are supported in the suburban policy area. So anyway, what I'm saying is that, you know, there may be a challenge to tie it directly to that suburban district. I mean, it's suburban line, but we just need some flexibility to work to accomplish the same purpose you're trying to achieve.
Supervisor Clark?
Yes, so Madam Chair, since we have Supervisor Higgins back, because he aptly pointed out the differences between the different maps, that entire pink shaded area, the suburban policy area, if this moves forward at some point, it's not ready yet, with staff working on language and everything else, for this use to only be in the suburban policy area would be anywhere within that suburban policy area that has land available. So that prior map that had the little red shaded spots, that's not what we're talking about. It's anywhere within this. But I have an alternative motion, Madam Chair. I move to postpone indefinitely ZOAM 2015-0005 Mixed Use Zoning Ordinance Amendment, PD MUB Zoning District.
Is there a second? Seeing no second, that motion dies. So we're back to the main motion that Chairman York put forward.
Madam Chair, if I may, and hopefully we can all speak the same language so we're on the same page. Yes, I, through this motion, am restricting it to the suburban policy area, which quite frankly, I don't understand what the problem is with that being the language of restriction. If the next board comes in and chooses to shrink the suburban policy area or increase the suburban policy area, then I think the zoning categories that are meant to be in the suburban areas ought to carry forward. That's just my thought with that. But even with the recommendation, does not the comp plan policy restrict this by to the red areas? Other folks can come in and rezone any category in the zoning ordinance to anywhere in the county, provided that it meets, if called for, central utilities and to be located on major roadways to handle the traffic. Is that not true?
That's correct. As long as the as long as that zoning district, the location specified in the ordinance is met, they can come in and ask for it anywhere.
So if this is adopted by the Board of Supervisors and an entity wants to come in and use this, a PBMUB, and rezone, and it's not being proposed in an area that is shown red on the comp plan map, your recommendation is that it's not supported by the comp plan.
That would be correct.
Thank you.
Supervisor Higgins.
That's what I was trying to get at before. So there, right now, this would be restricted to the red area unless it came in as a rezoning, and you all would make your recommendation based on the comprehensive plan such as it is.
You need Mike.
Sorry. Any proposal to remap to PDMUB would have to go through the legislative rezoning process. So where, if it is being proposed in the red area, it could be supported by the plan, but if not, the current policy would not support that, so the zoning staff referral or the zoning planning referral would say that it's not called for in the plan as
okay,
a policy.
That's what I was trying to get at before. Now, I was walking in when you put this map up. The suburban policy area is the pink?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Only?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And I believe if you overlaid the red areas from the previous map, they would only be in the pink area, right? Yes.
Right, and except for what's on the eastern periphery of Leesburg, that's the JLMA.
Okay, thank you.
So, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Question on the analysis, the impact again. So does staff know exactly how many residential units could be built by right based on the current zoning? Do you know that? Yes or no?
The current zoning for PDMUB is limited to the Concora development at
No, I'm sorry, that's not the question. So in the suburban policy areas that currently do not have the PDMUB, okay, because what we're talking about here is expanding the area for where PDMUB could be, correct?
Right, yes.
Okay, having said that, for the new areas.
No, we're not. I just asked you where this would be allowed by policy, and you said in the red areas.
Right, yes.
Okay, thank
okay,
you.
Okay, so let me just say, once again, there's a difference between policy and staff sending a recommendation of support or non-support to the board with an item, correct? There's nothing that would prohibit anybody from coming forward in that entire pink-shaded area outside of those current red areas and proposing a PDMUB development and it being moved forward to the board, and staff just would say we can't support this because it's not in keeping with the plan, and then the board could still approve it, correct?
Correct.
Yes, okay. That's an option. Yeah.
However, but for the PDMUB, could they do that today? We don't have this item, this new item in place today. So for those areas now, if somebody came in with a rezoning of a parcel of land in the area where we don't have the PDMUB, where it's not those red areas, could they request a rezoning to PDMUB?
Yes.
They could do that. Then why is this even being considered?
Staff was given the direction from the resolution of intent to amend by the board. ZOAG initiated the request of the board, and staff has helped
okay,
ZOAG
get there. That's a good technical answer. I appreciate that, and that, you know, kudos to you. That's appropriate answer. However, philosophically, why are we doing this if it's already allowed to occur?
For a point of clarification, staff, if you can correct me if I'm wrong, take the light green out in the middle of nowhere, you know what I'm saying, out on a country dirt road. If a landowner wants to put in a rezoning application there for anything, I'm saying for mixed use, for PDIP, OP, whatever, legally, they're allowed to pay their fee and file their application. Doesn't mean that they're going to get approved,
But per Virginia state law, you know, I mean, for example, like if I, on my 0.18 acres, wanted to put in a rezoning to say that I'm mixed-use business, you staff would happily accept my fee and process the application, and my 0.18 acres would not get approved for mixed-use development or PDI, POP, or, you know, whatever, you know, a research park, whatever. That's what we're trying to get at, is that even now, if an applicant wants to put in an application, you can't deny them the ability to put in an application.
The only
it's whether it gets approved or not.
And the only response to that would be there are, in most zoning districts, location requirements that would limit where the district is allowed to go. So, for example, based on the current location requirement and the proposed for the PDMUB, somebody in the AR1 could not submit an application for a PDMUB because it does not meet the location requirement. Now, if they were in a PD district and wanted to map, they could ask for a modification of that location requirement as part of their application. So it's a little complicated, but I think what you're getting at is correct, that if the ordinance allows you to map it and that location requirement in the ordinance isn't consistent with the plan, you can still ask to map it to that.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Supervisor Higgins?
To follow on that, I mean, we've all said that we support this zoning change and this type of zoning. We've all said that we support it in the appropriate areas that would be appropriate for it to be zoned. So by doing this, we are allowing the zoning in those appropriate areas that we've identified as in the red areas. Anybody that wants to go beyond that has to come in with an application for rezoning. At that time, all of the studies and things we've talked about would have to be done. All of the analysis would have to be done, transportation, housing, otherwise schools, to take a look at that. And that would be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. So this doesn't do anything other than allow the type of zoning that we've said we've all would like to see in the areas that we've said we all would like to see it in. And then if somebody wants to look at something else, then the process starts from the beginning. Right.
Yes.
Thank you.
Sorry, Supervisor Delgadio.
Sorry, I had another appointment, Madam Chairman, but this was a topic I wanted to ask. And I think the red areas is the PDMUB. Is that what we're talking about? The red areas?
MUB.
I asked for a map, and Janet, Supervisor Clark asked for a map.
So on page 58 of your iPad, Supervisor Delgado.
Thanks. 58?
Yes.
All the way at the end, okay.
The supplemental.
No, I'm in the supplemental. And so the red area is where the PDMUBs would be, and the resident, the intensity would be up to, as in the item, 30.
Actually, Joseph, if you could pull up that map that you had that, like, had the circle with the 50 in it and the 16s, that map on the screen here. Thank you.
Oh, it's blue on page. Yes.
The map that is now on the overhead screen was the map they put together to show where the blue is where central water utilities and sewer utilities are allowed, and then the overlay of the major roadways, because we would be looking at only doing PD MUBs where you have central water and sewer, and where there are major roadways, you know, to deal with any potential, you know, kind of traffic impacts.
So it's an expanded area, and that's where the increased density would be up to 30 units per acre?
Well, actually, the motion that we have on the table says that it would only be in the suburban policy area, which was the map we had up before that showed the pink area as the suburban policy area, that pink area. Thank you, Joseph.
I see. So the pink area is at the bottom of that very tip, right, at the very bottom. Well, that, no, the pink area. Oh, I see the pink. Okay, pink. All right. And I asked for an estimate. I know that we've already approved, and I voted no, to 5,000 to 6,000 additional units in the business areas there along Route 28 and in the particular district zonings. But that was a more or less a part of the 28 CPAM and the 606 area and the mixed-use density areas there. That was a ballpark estimate at the time that I voted no, and now I would assume this would increase the density even more.
The proposed amendment to the PDMUB zoning district would increase the density upward from 16 dwelling units an acre to 30 dwelling units an acre with bus service availability and density bonuses for unmet housing needs.
Right, but the additional density that I voted no on was for the increased density to 16 units. What would be the increase potentially?
Potential.
It was 5,000 to 6,000 units. Right. Was the ballpark estimate prepared by staff at the time. So at the board meeting, at the public hearing, I asked what would be the ballpark estimate of the essential build-out if someone comes in with applications in all these areas in the pink. Right. Pink area.
I recall that analysis for the Route 28 corridor plan update. We have not performed that same analysis for this zoning ordinance amendment. But prior discussion discussed that we would need additional time to conduct that analysis longer than the December board business meeting.
And I understand that. That's why I asked for the public hearing, because at the public hearing it sounded like doubling to 12,000 units in lay terms. You have the potential for 12,000 units versus the 5,000 to 6,000 units that had been previously discussed by, you know, dozens of meetings and so on, an actual formal vote. So what's wrong with that flip response on the part of one supervisor that you can go from a potential increased density of 5,000 to 6,000 to 12,000 units potentially with applications coming in, increased density?
Staff really can't comment on it because we haven't done the analysis. I wouldn't want to, you know, make a judgment either way without knowing.
Joseph, for a point of clarification, we initiated all of these business-friendly zoning ordinance amendments to try and be more business-friendly. During this process with PDMUB, has there been a change in requested densities? From, I'm saying, as of today, right now, pretend this disappears. Okay. What you, the number of housing units you can build in a PDMUB, okay, say is X.
Mm-hmm.
Should we approve these amendments? Is there an increase in the density?
On the existing approvals of PDMUB? Is that what you're asking?
Correct.
The existing approvals for the PDMEB zoning districts will be governed by the proffers and the CDP.
Right.
That was
so, for example, like Kincora, if they were authorized to have 1,400 units, they would still be authorized for the 1,400 units. There would not be a change.
I think it would depend on the proffer and how it was written.
Okay.
So I could be just misreading the technical language that you've proposed here, even though it says increase 16 units, and the words are there, to 30. That's not really an increase in units. I could be misunderstanding the application of the words.
The district is proposing to, the amendment is to propose a higher density level from 16 dwelling units an acre to 20 without bus and to 30 with bus service.
Okay.
However, that would go through a legislative process that you would, each the board would evaluate.
Right.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. Well, that's really all I want to put on the record. You know, in terms of my consistent position, I've been against the increased density in these areas, but it's clear that this is just related to existing, the PDMUB is being expanded, but that's pretty much a technical fix that you've provided the committee with. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
I got closing comments, ma'am, Chair.
Okay. Supervisor Clark?
I have one technical question with respect to, we all know that anybody can come in and request a rezoning, but currently now somebody comes in with an application in the PD MUB, the existing PD MUB areas, staff is going to provide a recommendation of support because it's consistent with the plan, correct? That's a yes or no.
Well, provided they meet the criteria.
Absolutely. They meet the criteria, but in terms of the zoning and everything. So if this were to move forward and get passed for expanding the area in the entire suburban policy area, right now if someone were to come in and submit a an application to rezone for PD MUB in an area where before we take action on this, if they were to do it today, would staff provide a recommendation of support or non-support?
Are you talking about if they came into the areas that were consistent with the plan? The red areas.
The red areas.
No, outside the red outside. Areas. Because we're talking about expanding this outside the red areas. Right now, before expanding it outside the red areas, if someone were to come in on one of those parcels and submit a rezoning request for PD MUB, would staff provide a recommendation of support or not?
It would not be consistent with the plan.
Right. Okay, so they would not. So today, as we sit here and speak, however, if we pass this for the suburban policy area and they come in for that same parcel of land after we've passed this for rezoning it to PD MUB, would staff then provide a recommendation of support?
It would not be consistent with the plan, and we wouldn't. We wouldn't be supporting it.
Okay, so it still goes back to, then again, why are we even dealing with this item?
Closing comments, I'll address all that.
I would love you to do your closing comments, sir.
All right. Board members, I hope you will support this. And I just need one clarification. This and a lot of how I vote will depend upon how you guys answer this. So I hope you answer it. This, if we make the changes in here, this does not give Kincora extra units. It can't.
Right. I haven't looked at the proffers, but I'm sure they're limited by proffers. So they would have to come in and amend their...
Well, exactly, because the proffers are based on the amount of units that they have been given.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, first of all, the changes in here, we go from 16 units currently an acre to 20 units to an acre. There are 66 proposed changes, if I counted that up right, to the use list. Primarily changes from either special exception up to permitted or even added just stuff back in or stuff in that would be allowed. So one would have to check the list to make sure. The other significant third change, I think, in this is the fact that before, this district was restricted to no fewer than 25 acres. Now, if appropriate, based on the language in here, somebody could propose something as small as 5 acres to an add to another planned development area on that. So it changes the complexity of the PB MUB. It doesn't change by policy where it could be put. So I think it's very clear that I think it's ready to go forward. In terms of the studies, again, I hope the next board, when they do the review of the comp plan, if they choose to do that, that they will do a full countywide study of everything to understand where we are infrastructure-wise, including transportation, key network. And they also have to study that with the potential threat of no connection to 234 in Prince William County, too. And that's going to make a heck of a difference. So that's my comments, Madam Chair, for closing.
Thank you. Just to restate the motion in short order,
Chairman York moved that we recommend approval of ZOAM 2015-0005 as it was amended by the Planning Commission and with the inclusion of it limited to the suburban policy area. All those in favor of the motion?
Hold it. You forgot one other important, and that was removing the data center.
Well, that was a separate motion that had been approved. I apologize. And, of course, that's incorporated into this now motion, the removal of a data center. All those in favor of the motion as discussed and amended here today, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
All right, that motion will carry 3-2 with Supervisor Clark and Supervisor Delgadio as noes. And, of course, since we have the clarification on the public hearing question, this item would then be forwarded to the December 2nd Board of Supervisors meeting for action. Okay, excellent. Thank you very much. Our next item on the agenda is ZOAM 2015-0003, Floodplain Overlay District. This item is for action. We're going to have the musical chairs occur and staff come forward to give us any updates that we need on the floodplain overlay district. Everyone is fully aware that this is time sensitive due to the federal emergency management folks at FEMA.
Madam Chair, if I may please,
yes.
I believe you said item number three, and floodplain is item number one.
If I did say item number three, I apologize. It is item number one, and that's why I stated it, ZOAM 2015-0003. Good morning, gentlemen, whenever you're ready.
All right, and thank you. And
Madam
yes.
Chairman, I've been a part of these discussions up to now. May I have a seat? They filled it all up with ZOAM. Is that all right?
I'm sure we can find you a chair.
Thank you. I haven't got much to say, but I want to be up. Thank you.
All right, and thank you for allowing me to brief you on this item. I will try to keep it as brief as possible. I know that the committee and the board is familiar with the deadlines and the issues that we are discussing. So with that respect, at the conclusion of the public hearing, the board requested staff to come back to Transportation Land Use Committee with some information. First, countywide maps of the floodplain overlay districts, which you will find behind you, provided for you, broken out into both the western and eastern regions. Also, as you recall, the county researched and proposed standards for the proposed new use of stream restoration, which during the public hearing, there were a few comments received amending or suggesting changes to that standard. As a result of the board's direction, staff has circled back to the professionals that we worked with, as well as representatives from the Center of Watershed Protection, Department of Conservation and Recreation, the State Office of the Natural Resources Conservation Service, Department of Forestry, Virginia Tech, University of Maryland, Duke University, as well as our own Soil and Water Conservation District representative, engineering consultants, and every individual that submitted a comment or concern, and everyone now agrees with the amended language in the ordinance and the tech memo that's part of your packet that would later be inserted to the facility standards manual. The final thing that the board gave us direction on, we received, we are to come prepared to discuss the issues that you have in your report. The draft ordinance sections and attachments 1-5 reflect the Planning Commission's recommendations. So I'll briefly go over the issues. We've broken them into three separate categories: those that the Planning Commission did support, those that the Planning Commission amended, and those that the Planning Commission did not support. I also note that these are all issues because staff did not support any of the issues. First category, the Planning Commission supported road crossings that are not public CTP roads that create an off-site increase in base flood elevation by the special exception process. Next, there are two issues that the Planning Commission amended. One was the parking for uses that are not permitted in the floodplain overlay, but are permitted in the underlying district. The Planning Commission, however, wanted to limit the area of the major floodplain that could be used to 3% of the floodplain area on the property. Additionally, they recommended that the parking in that 3% area be a pervious surface. The second issue that they amended was allowing the stream channel to be altered or relocated by means of stream restoration. However, if the applicant were not able to meet those county standards that I mentioned a minute ago, by right, they could pursue a special exception on their own. Again, with the extensive research and agreements that we've come to with the many sectors, it is agreed that the by right use, as it's now worded, it's no longer necessary to have a special exception process to modify those standards. We've left some flexibility for those professionals. The uses that the Planning Commission did not support are stormwater management facilities that are not permitted in the floodplain overlay but are permitted in the underlying district, outdoor storage, changing the list of special exception uses to a minor special exception, and the ability to modify standards by the special exception process. To refresh your memory, staff has concerns with a number of these with these uses. First, the uses will increase the clearing and land disturbing activity in the floodplain while overall reducing the natural functions of flood dampening, velocity reduction, infiltration of that natural floodplain areas that they provide. Further, locating stormwater facilities, parking, and outdoor storage of goods and materials puts distinct pollutants closer to our streams. If the committee were to support the Planning Commission's recommendation of pervious surfaces for parking, staff would suggest a recommendation be narrowed to engineering soil reinforcement media and not hardened pervious materials. Staff also has concerns with the maintenance and the county's financial liability to maintain stormwater facilities and enforcement of any provision that indicates the use can be relocated upon an impending flood. Finally, staff's concern with the shift from special exception process to a minor special exception process is losing that full staff review of the projects that may have extenuating circumstances and warrant a full review, and the loss of the public input at the Planning Commission hearing. The last issue, the modification of the standards, is the one single issue FEMA has affirmatively indicated would not be compliant, as the agency states that those standards are the minimum National Flood Insurance Program standards. It is imperative to point out that ZOAG and staff has come to a lot of agreements, and there may be some issues currently in front of you today that they have some additional comments on. But with that, I invite any questions you may have for us, and I have several experts here that would be accompanying me to assist with any of those questions.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Let me just, if the committee agrees with staff 100% on this, what motion, would this motion be appropriate?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Supervisor Clark.
Yes, Madam Chair. I just have a question with respect to why this item wasn't split in two so that just the requirements that are associated with FEMA for us to meet this December deadline is provided for us to take action on, and then the other considerations are separate. I mean, I don't understand why we're mixing these.
Like I say, I know that's been a point of discussion. The direction we received was to bring back this information for you guys to at least consider.
Okay. So technically, do you see any problem with us separating these two items and making a motion to move forward with approving the portion that applies to the FEMA requirements and then dealing with the other separately?
I do not.
Okay. Madam Chair, that would be my recommendation. So I would like to make a motion on that.
Let her make the motion so we know what the motion is.
Thank you. I move the Transportation and Land Use Committee forward to the Board of Supervisors December 2nd, 2015 business meeting and recommend for approval only those changes in ZOAM 2015-0003 that are required by FEMA.
It's been moved and properly seconded that we forward these changes that are recommended by staff to meet the FEMA requirements for the December 2nd Board of Supervisors meeting. Do you have an opening?
Just that I think a follow-on to this would be a motion for dealing with the other items packaged separately. So my question for staff would be, if we make that motion, would you then be able to associate a new ZOAM number with it? How would you, okay, you're nodding your heads. Okay, all right. So with that, I think it's pretty self-explanatory what I'm trying to do here.
I'm sorry, and our zoning administrator corrected me, the statement I made to Chairman York about this being our recommendations. The draft you have in front of you is the Planning Commission's recommendations, which do differ somewhat from the staff's recommendation.
Okay.
Apologize.
But Supervisor Clark is moving to recommend the document, which includes the Planning Commission recommendations.
Only FEMA.
Just FEMA.
Correct.
Okay. I wanted to make sure everybody was clear since we're doing this back and forth.
Right, because some of the Planning Commission's recommendations are associated with other items that don't pertain to the required FEMA.
Right, the FEMA concerns. I actually have literally one question if no one else has questions. I'm sensitive to stormwater management since, you know, having been on my homeowners board and dealing with that. I would like to have discussion about that in particular, how that came up. If I could start with ZOAG, talking about the stormwater management item. Because I know it's a big issue. I know, for example, my homeowners association, we manage something like 24 stormwater management ponds. So,
Madam Chair, may I have a point of clarification because we have a motion on the table specifically applicable to the FEMA requirements.
I understand that.
ZOAG associated.
Yes, and as you are fully aware, anyone can ask a question or possibly move an amendment or a substitute motion, et cetera, et cetera. So, if I may be able to ask my question about that one item, I'd be appreciative. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have to admit I'm a little bit confused. I'll answer your stormwater management question because we feel that's an important issue. But I'm trying to understand what you're recommending go forward because of all of the language. I think what I heard was you're recommending that the staff version that went to the Planning Commission is your recommendation. Is that true? Because when you say FEMA changes, I mean, there's word changes and number changes all through this whole ordinance for somebody to go through and say, well, that was caused by FEMA, and this was caused by, you know, citizen concerns over the last several years. Are you saying that the version that that staff presented to the Planning Commission is the one you're recommending move forward, which basically didn't include the majority of the ZOAG recommendations, but it did have some clarification items in there.
So clarification on my motion means that only the items described in this packet that are applicable to the FEMA requirements. And then, of course, I made the comments about us dealing with the rest of the items in a separate packet. So that doesn't mean that the ZOAG or additional Planning Commission support and recommendations would go away. They just have to be separated. And staff knows specifically what those FEMA requirements are. So that this is not to obviate the ZOAG recommendations. It's just separating them. That's all. Obviously, they are not separated in this packet that is before us. So that's incumbent on staff to do in bringing it forward to the board. Mark.
Yeah, I did want to also provide some additional clarification, and I think Mr. Quante makes a good point. Not all of the changes in the draft are only based on what FEMA requires. There was agreement with ZOAG and staff as we went through on a number of other changes. I think what I understand your motion to be is that you want to move forward with the draft that staff recommends, and that the issues that ZOAG has raised, those seven issues, be carried forward with a different zoning ordinance amendment.
Yes, so then we would have the item specifically applicable to the deadline of December for FEMA be passed, and then we have the time to deal with this separately.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Chair.
I fully understand where she's coming from, but I'm not certain the answer there. The changes that staff recommended, just to make sure, did they only deal with the requirements by FEMA, or were there other changes that staff were proposing that don't deal with the issues from FEMA?
Right. The draft text, there's many amendments in there. Many are required by FEMA, but there's some that are in there that FEMA, they're not mandatory by FEMA, but they meet FEMA's requirements. So I just wanted to be clear that the draft text, I think what I heard Ms. Clark's goal would be that where staff and ZOAG have issues, she wants to put those off and deal with them as a separate amendment and move forward only with
the... I understand that, but the challenge is we're all kind of saying different things.
Right,
and as
right.
I understood her motion, and please clarify if I'm misinterpreting that, her motion was simply to adopt those policies that are needed to meet FEMA's requirement. Okay, so out of all those that came forward from staff, not what came from ZOAG, but how many of those issues are required to address FEMA's requirements? Because her motion wasn't to support all of your recommendations, only those that deal with the need to get approval by FEMA.
Right. FEMA was very specific on some of the requirements in the ordinance, specifically off the top of my head, definitions, the standards, the variance section that we added at the end. But there has been significant cleaning of the ordinance and making it certainly a better ordinance, with some agreements with ZOAG as well, that I think does create a better ordinance that in staff's opinion, we wouldn't want to lose those advancements.
Right. So those would be dealt with in a separate item. So even if that carries forward with this item, but in a separate motion.
Okay.
So only the FEMA required items is what I made a motion for to approve to move forward.
I know, but I'm going to ask a technical question because we have all sorts of documents, attachments, you know. Section 1, 103, Section 4, 1500, Section 6, 1000, Section 6-1606. But what I'm hearing from staff is, for example, that there were the technical changes that we needed for FEMA, but in reality, while you all were in there, you did some cleanup.
Absolutely.
So if we take your motion strictly, it's literally only the FEMA changes and not the cleanup that they did as well. And I've got heads bobbing up and down.
So I would be amenable to modifying my motion to make it be staff's recommendations, and then we deal with the rest of it in the separate item, if that helps to clean it up.
That's okay. What staff
significantly
would.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Right. Is the seconder okay with that motion?
I'm okay. I just have a question.
For the yes. ZOAG. Staff recommendations as it relates to FEMA, did you have, for ZOAG, did you have issues with how staff interpreted some of the FEMA requirements, or did you have issues with how staff interpreted the ZOAG, FEMA?
I mean, we actually worked very closely with staff to work through and get those interpretations figured out ahead of time. In some cases, we were mistaken on what they thought the interpretation would be. So I think To follow on the comments, though, the ordinance has been kind of reorganized and rewritten, so to try to pull out certain changes is difficult. So I think the current motion is doable, which is you move forward the staff version. I still have one comment on stormwater management on the staff version, if there's an appropriate time.
Thank you. Supervisor Higgins.
Thank you, Chairman. I really have a question for Supervisor Clark. What this seems to be a very complicated process that everybody's worked together on to come up with a document that we're dealing with here, and we're kind of pulling out pieces of it. I guess I'm curious what your intent is or motivation is.
Well, if you look through the document, you'll see there are a number of differences of opinion, disagreement between staff and ZOAG, and they are on extraneous items that we have the ability to deal with outside of the FEMA requirements. And we have this deadline with FEMA that we have to meet to approve certain requirements. So it's a matter of just making sure that we separate out our required items and cleanup that staff has worked with ZOAG on, and then having these other items dealt with separately because they are like an accessory dwelling. Pardon this is my only way to figure it out. So it's really an additional supplementary would like to change and doesn't have to be changed in terms of those items. So I just think that it waters down the FEMA requirements and cleanup of the language related to what we need to do for FEMA to include all the rest of that. So that's all. It's just, and we will be dealing with all of this rest, but it sounds like ZOAG is supportive, staff is supportive of moving forward with my motion to have the FEMA requirements in this approved separate item with staff's recommendations for the moving forward staff's recommendations and then dealing with this separately.
Well, point of clarification, I'm assuming it's not specifically just staff recommendations. It's the recommendations staff, planning commission, and ZOAG all agreed on.
Yes. Yeah. Associated with the FEMA requirements, yes.
Right. Any additional discussion, Mr. Chairman?
So then when would staff be ready to come back with the second half, and how easy will it be for staff when it comes to the full board on the second to actually have in front of us the actual list based on, or excuse me, the actual amendments based on the motion today?
I'll address that second part first. As far as will we be able to come to the business meeting on the second with that direction we've received, if that direction is only that which FEMA is required and what everyone has agreed upon, the non-contentious issues, yes, we can make that at the business meeting, and we're prepared to make that. I don't know the answer to the timing of the second or supplementary ZOAM.
But that's, in essence, ready to go for discussion, right?
That's correct.
I would assume. Okay. Is it the intent by the maker not to have that discussion today?
Yes, sir. I think it would be better, it would be more substantial conversation to have it when they have it separated out and it's clean.
Madam Chair, just and staff, as we know, we have the complication of change in guard. So this would be then the second half of this coming back to a future land use and transportation meeting. So by the motion, if adopted, then staff would assume that going forward to the next committee meeting.
Okay.
the...
The second part, which is the non-FEMA required recommendations.
Okay.
Chairman, I think if that was the committee's intent, I think if we had an additional motion that sent it to a future Transportation Land Use Committee meeting, I think we could work around the schedule with the chairwoman to come back with those seven issues.
Okay. Would the maker of the motion accept an amendment that the non-FEMA requirements come back to a future Transportation and Land Use Committee meeting for further discussion?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Does a seconder accept that? Okay, okay, excellent. Any additional discussion? All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, that motion carries 5-0. Gentlemen, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
All right. The next item on our agenda is ZOAM 2014-0004, Section 5-5108, Steep Slopes Standards and Article 8 Definitions. See, a few of the players have changed, but as they say, the game remains the same. If you staff would like to start with any updates that we need. Thank you.
Okay. Well, good morning again, and I hope you all don't get tired of me. But thank you for giving me a chance to brief you on where we are with the Steep Slope SOAM. Give you an overview of the direction you last gave us. We've made some changes for you to consider. Starting as Attachment 1, A1, you will see the latest changes in the steep slope standards per your direction, and they're reflected in blue. These are in addition to the previously considered changes that are shown in red. Also, I'd like to point out that you'll see highlighted text. These are additional clarifications and cleanup changes that were made that were unrelated to your requested changes in blue. But staff feels that the highlighted changes were mostly clerical and do not have any substantial changes. So to go through some of the issues, this draft does include the differences between the suburban and non-rural planned development zoning districts, and I'll elaborate that on those differences in the next 3 points. The issue number 2 in your packet, per your direction, we added the discussed list of special exception uses and activities, as well as standards for their review by the board. I'll note that in the suburban and non-rural areas, that the draft does reflect a minor special exception, and that staff, again, does not support a minor special exception. Issue number 3, we've added a final section to 51508. That is modifications of the development standards per the committee's direction. Again, staff does not support modifying the standards. However, if they are to be modified, we recommend it be accomplished through a full special exception. The draft in front of you has a minor special exception for those suburban and non-rural areas again. Also, I'll point out that Mark Stoltz, Zoning Administrator, added in that modification of the standards additional standards that reflect zoning modification language that's found in Section 6.12.17. Finally, again, per TLUC's direction, we changed the minimum size of the regulated steep slope area from 5,000 square feet to 10,000 square feet in the suburban and non-rural areas. Additionally, we added language that within the suburban and non-rural areas, an applicant may encroach into the very steep slopes up to 5,000 square feet through the special exception process. Staff does not support those encroachments and we feel anything not permitted in the very steep slopes. In addition to those changes, the committee also requested several pieces of information. One of the requests was a table showing the committee's direction on the issues for each of the zoning districts, and you'll find that in the back of your packet. Also requested was a countywide steep slopes map be displayed, and I'm sorry I didn't jump up and move those over. They are right over here. I'd be happy to move them. Okay. Sure. So that's the countywide steep slopes map, just like the last maps that we had, broken out east and west. Another request was to calculate the percent land area in the suburban policy area that was very steep slopes. Now, according to our analysis, there's approximately 60,000 acres in the suburban policy area, and of those, 344 are very steep slopes. It was also requested, so the percentage, excuse me, is a little over half of a percent. Also, of those 344 acres, 33 of those acres lie within the major floodplain. And that was another request. You also requested some examples. So on your screen in this presentation, I have a few examples that I've encountered in the application of the zoning ordinance. This one in front of us is the overlook at University Center. Shaded at the bottom right-hand part of the screen are what they showed as the very steep slope areas that they had to avoid. Now, the project manager that worked on this told me that they pursued a residential application because the commercial application they were looking for wouldn't fit because of these encumbrances. Also, to avoid the very steep slope areas, there is a retaining wall, hard to see here on the computer screen, but there's a retaining wall that's up to 20 feet in height to avoid these areas. Another example is High School 8, Riverside High School. There are moderately steep and very steep areas illustrated in this. The darker areas are the very steep areas. And these are the limits of clearing and grading that they amended the application so that they would avoid the very steep slope areas. Initially, the application came in and there was encroachments into the very steep slope areas. They were able to move it out, and it was actually the stadium for the high school that had pushed those limits, and they have a retaining wall that is about 6 to 8 feet in height on the plan to avoid those very steep slope areas, as an example. The final example I have for you is one we haven't gotten in, or I haven't gotten in as an application yet, but I did meet with the applicant earlier this year for a data center, I believe, and this is in Eastern Loudoun, and we went out in the field and we reviewed these very steep slope areas. These were found both in the field review and in research of the aerial photos. These are man-made, and this is one of those examples where these are no longer going to be shown or regulated with adoption of this ZOAM. So this was one that was not an issue, but I just want to show an example.
Can I ask a question, Madam Chair? Yes. On the examples that you've, the first two where those had rezonings associated with it, if a developer comes in and proposes a development and wants to propose disturbing steep slopes, and we change to a minor special exception for encroachment into the steep slopes, would the rezoning a case obviously go to the Planning Commission and then to the Board of Supervisors, but the one then would be a minor special exception, which then would only go to the Board of Supervisors?
That's right.
Well, how does that work as a planning commissioner? You're trying to deal with your development or rezoning, and you can't talk about the one because it's a minor special exception. How do you deal with that, Pat?
We actually had that example just recently, and because we had a combination of a special exception and a minor special exception, all the minor special exception information and issues were discussed at the Planning Commission. It becomes part of the package, and you have to go through the whole process. That's what happened just recently. It doesn't go a separate track. It's all one application.
Then I would ask, then, why change it?
It's for somebody who's not going through a zoning, and they just need it, like a HS8. If they're not going through a zoning, but they just need to do a little encroachment instead of having to spend a lot of money on a retaining wall, so they can come in with a minor special exception and go through the process.
Thank you.
Additional questions, or do you want to continue?
I'm sorry. I'm finished with that.
Okay,
that
I just wanted to make sure you went through
example.
Everything. Okay.
Well, staff, how would you like us to walk through this? Would you like us to go just a quick item by item? You know, the different, you know, like say, can steep slope standards be developed differently for the suburban policy area versus the other policy areas? Of course, we got that answer, then yes, it can be. You know, but like, then go to number two, number three, that type of thing. Would that be the most logical way to do it and see what the consensus is of the committee? I'm also asking it for the committee members. Okay, I'm getting nods. Okay, great. All right, second question then was, should all of the permitted uses or special exception uses in the underlying zoning district be permissible within very steep slope areas with the approval of a special exception or minor special exception? Mr. Chairman?
I'm at special exception.
Supervisor Higgins, Supervisor Delgatti, how do you all feel about
it? Let me just, if I may, say the reason for that. We have a planning commission for a reason. And, you know, why they're serving, they're dealing with land use issues. And I appreciate sometimes the political discussion that goes on at the board level. But I personally, you know, having served on a planning commission, would feel that at best that it also comes through that process. That's just me.
If I could, Madam Chair, too, just for clarification, part of resolving that question at the last TLUC, staff had come back with a narrow list of uses that were either dependent on steep slopes or a couple of areas where we would allow some expansion of ag structures and existing commercial structures if there was no other alternative that's available.
Yes,
or
Mark.
Feasible. So the question,
okay,
whether any underlying use was basically narrowed significantly.
I understand, but okay. We are addressing this question, and I believe I'm going to look around. Is there consensus that it would be through special exception from the committee members? Full special exception, because the question was also full special exception or a minor special exception. So everybody wants full special exception. Okay. All right. I'm trying to get us out of here before,
I understand.
You know, 7 p.m.
Sure,
tonight. Okay.
Chairman?
Yes, Eric.
Under one of the uses that's listed here on page A7 of the draft ordinance, it's item V, small v, expansion of commercial uses and structures existing as of June 16, 1993, when no other alternatives exist. We'd like to see some modifier to the no alternatives exist, because with my example of the Goodstone Inn, there are other alternatives. They could move to another jurisdiction. Just a modification of there, and I think that's probably our only comment.
Mark, would you like
to
address that?
I know we did meet with Eric and Pat, and we did look at some other language that's used in the steep slopes to replace, instead of saying where no other alternative exists, to change that to when no other alternative is feasible or available, and that loosened it up a little bit.
Is there agreement on that, and is that language in the draft?
It's not, but we would, if the TLUC recommends that, we would change it when it goes forward to the board to that language.
Technically, which bullet are we under? Because we're under two. Is that, yes, that's what I thought. Okay. Supervisor Delgado, are you comfortable with that? Supervisor Higgins? Perfect. All right, we are in agreement to that change, because, yes, we wouldn't want to tell someone, well, your only option is to move out of the county. All right. So I believe that's it for item number two. Can we go to the next item?
Yep.
Item number three was, should the development standards for very steep slope areas be modifiable through the special exception or minor special exception process? Yes, please, sir.
Again, I'd go back to special exception.
Okay. Supervisor Higgins, Supervisor Delgatti, are you comfortable with it being a special exception? Because the question is, can they modify it through a special exception or a minor special exception? Remember, a regular special exception goes to the Planning Commission and then to the Board of Supervisors.
Minor just goes automatically to the board.
Correct.
And the ZOAG position is that under unique circumstances, the applicant should have the ability to modify the performance through the special exception process. So ZOAG is okay with it going through the special exception?
Yes.
In unique circumstances?
Yeah, we're okay with that.
Okay.
All right. Then I believe we have consensus on that, so that we would include that there is a special exception process for the very steep slope areas being modifiable. Are we good with that? Need any additional?
I would just, and as I presented, what you hadn't seen until this packet was marked as the zoning administrator's additional standards that he added that were included in zoning modifications from Section 6.12.17. They are in the draft now, but I just wanted to point that out as part of the process. That is something that we've proposed.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to make sure that someone is keeping track of this so that these we're doing by consensus, that when we get to the end and we do a motion, that everything that has been agreed upon ends up in the document. Okay. All right, next item, item number four. Should the minimum size of a steep slope area be increased from 5,000 square feet to 10,000 square feet? Now I want to ask, has this possibly also been helped by the fact that we can do a set of standards for the suburban policy area and then a different set, say for AR1 and AR2?
Yes.
So do we need to address it separately? Because I think one of the things we were looking at was ensuring that there's more ability in the suburban policy area for commercial development. So
the draft was a revised so that the minimum size is 10,000 in the suburban and non-rural plan development districts, and then it would retain 5,000 in the rural areas. So we did split it up.
And I would agree with that.
Okay. So we are okay with having it in the two separate areas, and I want to make sure we say this right. So it would be 5,000 feet, say, in the rural policy area, and it would be 10,000 feet in the suburban policy area. Everybody in agreement with that? Okay, excellent. And by the way, if we're going too fast or missing something, holler. I believe those are the items that we needed to cover. Are there any additional items that we need to cover?
Can I ask something for clarification? Because this would not be my intent. The 10,000 square feet, the increase of 5,000, Mark, how would that potentially impact any stream overlay?
Well, in terms of other overlays like the mountainside, where you might have overlapping regulations, the stricter regulation would apply. It wouldn't impact anything like under the mountainside development, if I understand you.
So somebody couldn't just go and disturb 10,000 square, up to 10,000 square feet, if it impacted the stream valley in some way that was
right.
negative to the environment.
Right.
Thank you. That's all I want to know.
All right, any additional questions? Yes.
Staff has the additional question. We were requested to come back with you, to you with the potential for encroachment in that suburban and non-rural areas. Encroachment through a special exception process into an amount of very steep slopes, and that was included in the draft there in front of you. We didn't have a threshold of encroachment. We used in the draft 5,000 square feet. We don't support it, but you guys did request us come back with that. So,
okay.
Can you tell me exactly where that language is in the draft? Is it something that we need to actually read before we vote?
Madam Chair, I need some straightening out. I don't quite understand what you just told us.
Okay.
I'll try. During the last meeting, it's on page A7.
A7?
A. It's an Apple dash 7.
So it would be 87 on 87 on the iPad?
Is that right? Oh, okay.
That's right.
That's right. The highlighted.
What's the page number is A7?
Yeah, on the non-iPad.
Okay.
Yes, yeah.
What page on the iPad, please?
I don't have that. Do you know that one?
I'll defer to Kenny.
102? Okay. Zoning districts and Route 20.
Yes, you're correct. iPad, page 102.
And it's the highlighted.
Near the bottom.
Right, near the bottom. And that was added based on a ZOAG recommendation that staff does not support, which basically was added to the use list. It would only apply in the suburban or non-rural districts where and right now the way the language is reading, I believe it would be the way it's worded, a minor special exception to allow an encroachment into the very steep slopes up to a maximum of 5,000 square feet. And that would be for any use that's allowed in the underlying district. So that, based on TLUC, I think TLUC gave us direction to look at that, but they didn't give us direction in terms of how much or by what process. But staff, even though we didn't support it, we put the language in that would allow it by minor specs in suburban areas up to 5,000 square feet. So,
okay. Mr. Quante.
And this actually is the example we were talking about earlier, the HS8, or, you know, you come in and get a special exception so that you don't have to build a very expensive retaining wall and you can do an encroachment, but no more than 5,000 square foot of encroachment.
But if, again, just to make sure, if this was being encroached in a very sensitive area other than the fact that it's steep slope, the restrictor
yes.
policy would come into place in protecting that.
That's correct.
That the basis, why does staff feel they want a full special exception?
Well, again, staff doesn't support it all just because we have concerns of allowing encroachments into the very steep slopes beyond what we've added to the use list here and what's in there now. But we would say if the board does want to consider allowing this encroachment up to 5,000, that we would recommend the full special exception because it does take some time to do an evaluation of the impacts. The minor special exception time frame is pretty short for us to do a referral, and it may not be enough time. We don't feel like it'd be enough time to look at all the impacts that might happen from that encroachment. Plus, it'll also give, you know, an additional opportunity for public input with the full specs.
Understanding that, Madam Chair, if we do this, I would recommend this full special exception.
Supervisor Higgins, Supervisor Delgadio, are you consensus having it as a special exception? The full special exception, including the Planning Commission. I'm doing that for everybody's clarification. I think we have consensus on that. Any additional items that we need to go forward with? Okay. Now, does someone want to be brave and do a motion to recommend this to the Board of Supervisors as we have amended here today?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'll move that the Transportation Land Use Committee forward ZOAM 2014-0004 as provided in attachments 1 and 2 of November 20th, 2015. Action item and as amended on November 20th with a recommendation of approval to the December 2nd, 2015 Board of Supervisors business meeting for action.
It's been moved and properly seconded. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? That motion carries 4-0-1 with Supervisor Clark absent for the vote. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
We have one last item on our agenda today. That is the Howardsville Community Wastewater Project. For the public's notice, when this was originally advertised, it was going to be an update, an informational item. However, staff has been working on this. There is new information, and staff will be requesting action from the Transportation Land Use Committee this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak with you today. As Madam Chair referenced, this was originally just an informational item. Based on the complexity of the item and the probability of any of the potential solutions exceeding the current budget, we thought it prudent to transition this to seek guidance from the committee and the board as we move forward. So with that, I'd like to just recognize the folks that are with us today. We have Mr. Alan Brewer. He is our Water and Environmental Programs Division Manager within General Services. We have Mr. Tom Lipinski. He is the Manager of Planning for Loudoun Water. And Mr. Ben Shoemaker is the Manager of Community Systems with Loudoun Water. We wanted to make sure that you had the expertise available to you should you have any questions regarding this. So the last time you officially had conversation about this particular system was a year ago, November 2004, and the board committed $1.4 million in CIP to design and construct a community wastewater solution for the Howardsville community. Staff has been working alongside Loudoun Water and other partners to identify that solution, and we have run into a number of challenges. The first and foremost is that we had hoped there would be a drain field solution nearby, proximal, keeping the costs low and keeping the solution local to the area. Why it is our hope that a drain field solution will still be the case, and we are optimistic that we will find it, we needed to make sure that the board understood the reality that that may not be feasible and that other options may need to be considered to move forward. So in the original document that was submitted to you, there were three potential solutions presented to you in Table 1. The first one is obviously a nearby subsurface drain field for the community, which is what we had all kind of hoped for. And we're still very optimistic. I'm going to try to be optimistic that is the final solution. But there are two other options that are on the table, one of which is a treatment plant that does a direct discharge to a stream or dry ditch. And then the other one is to pipe these communities, these properties, down to the existing St. Louis sewage treatment plant. If you have a desire to get into the details of those, certainly Loudoun Water can illuminate those. Staff just wanted to make sure you were aware of those. But going to our particular needs as we move forward, we have put forth a couple of items that we would like clarity and guidance on, which is on the last page of the item itself. And I know I'm being brief, but it is
not at all
close to the noon time, and I don't want to.
Right.
Okay.
For a point of clarification, there is a green packet in front of you in case you didn't see it in the supplemental on the iPad. On the third page, I believe, is the motion that staff would like us to do so that they can proceed with hopefully a couple of options to try and help the situation in Howardsville. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. If we go with, and I'm looking at the white sheet page 2, which is an initial report, pumping station discharge to St. Louis treatment plant, do we still need the same land that you would need for the sewage treatment plant?
Yes, ma'am. Sir. Forgive me.
That's okay. I've been mistaken for worse, so you know.
My sincere apologies. No mistake.
So I guess I owe an apology now. Well,
to your question.
Okay, so you need the same land, regardless of which of the three options you go to. then, Madam Chair, I would think that this, well, if something needs to be done, that we would still continue to go down with the land acquisition process. Number two is beginning land acquisition. Price purchase easement for a community.
In reality, they'd like
I don't know all. If you don't have the drain field. I mean, if you end up doing number three, you don't need the drain. You don't need to do the easement, right?
My response to you was relative to 1B. 1B, we would need for any of the three.
Okay, gotcha. So I would continue to do that. What is? So if you can't do. You can't do one, then obviously one will be just moot. You would need an easement, though, to pipe it into a stream, I would assume?
We would likely use the easements along the roadways to accommodate that. The item one is particular to a larger drain field easement, and that would require significant negotiations with landowners.
When will be determined that you can't do number one?
Well, we will continue to explore those options now, but the official land acquisition or the easement acquisition process is what we're looking for direction for. So we would continue to explore the viability of that, and we're hoping that within the next several months we would have a feel as to whether or not that would be possible. And if the board then gave us the green light to do acquisition of easements, then we would bring those to you.
So you just need us to make a recommendation to the board to really go forward with the land acquisition?
Yes, sir.
And then from that, you'll just have to determine what happens based on what your ability to do option number one is.
Yes, sir.
Or not.
And if I could just further complicate things.
Please don't. It's been a complicated
It has, and I apologize. I just wanted to know that all of this is subject to available funding. If we get into the nitty-gritty in this, obviously we're not going to acquire an easement for a drain field if the board is not able to appropriate the funds for that. Because we do recognize that the further out we go, the higher costs are to get the pipelines to it. So while we would be authorized to pursue the acquisition of an easement, that would be a conversation that would be tied in with available funding.
I'm confused.
Yes, sir.
That option is the cheapest option.
It is, but it is over the current budget that we have, which is $1.4 million, and the current estimates are $1.6 million. That could extend to $1.8 million, $1.9 million, depending on how far out the drain field is from the community.
I'm just looking at the 20-year total cost.
Okay.
And that is clearly the least expensive of all options, which is why it's our preference. Right.
Then, Madam Chair, I'll make a motion that we make a recommendation to the board that staff continue the process to begin land acquisition for the purchasing of the property for a wastewater treatment facility.
Okay, is there a second? Second. All right, it's been moved and properly seconded that the TLUC committee recommends to the full Board of Supervisors to authorize county staff to begin the land acquisition process to purchase property for a wastewater treatment facility for the Howardsville wastewater project. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion will carry 4-0-1 with Supervisor Clark absent for the vote. Yes, sir.
And we appreciate that clear direction on that. 1A that is also we would like clarification as to whether or not you still would like us to pursue land acquisition for the potential easement for the community drain field.
Well, I just asked you that before,
yes,
and what I thought I got back is how do you decide what you're going to do on these other options until you know what you can or can't do? What's holding this up on going forward with the surface drain field?
A willing seller is what is holding
us up. That's it.
Yes, sir. And we would need to find a willing seller, and then enter negotiations with willing seller to acquire an easement over their land to place the community drain.
Well, then I misunderstood. Then, Madam Chair, I will make the motion that we add to that motion that they also continue the land acquisition process to purchase an easement for a community subsurface drain field. And I make that recommendation why up front it could end up being a little bit more money at over a 20-year period. It's the cheaper, I think, from an overall maintenance standpoint for the county in terms of the options based on what we see in here.
Okay, but just for clarity, since we already moved and approved the first motion, it would be best just to handle this as a separate motion to keep it clean. Is there a second to the motion? Okay. It's been moved and properly seconded that the Transportation Land Use Committee recommend to the full Board of Supervisors that county staff be directed to continue the land acquisition process to purchase an easement for a community subsurface drain field in the Howardsville wastewater project.
And let me ask, because I don't want to have to do this again, and I think I see two more coming. You're wanting us to give you recommendation on C and D?
If you are so inclined, yes, please.
I would amend my motion to include that staff go forward and to apply for a commission permit to establish a sewer service district for the Howardsville area. And then also, I'm assuming D is in case nothing else works, that they also evaluate the potential for a pump and haul system as an interim wastewater solution.
Does the seconder retain his second?
He does.
Okay. Any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion will carry 4-0-1 with Supervisor Clark absent for the vote.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Seeing that we have no further business on our agenda this morning, this meeting is adjourned. Everyone have a great weekend and happy Thanksgiving. I will note for the public the scheduled December 18th Transportation Land Use Committee meeting is canceled. It will be posted on our FOIA calendar, but for anyone who is watching, there will not be a Transportation Land Use Committee meeting on December 18th. Thank you and have a great Thanksgiving.